She said, "Hey, babe, I see you on the wild side." And the color girls go, dee 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 dee. Sorry, that song's been really catchy in my head these days. Lou Reed, Walk on the Wild Side. It's a doozy. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back. Welcome back on the bus. If you've been on the bus before, you know what it is. You're on the bus. You can't be on the bus or off the bus. There's only one choice and one option, and you're either on it or off it. And we're so glad that all of you guys are on the bus today. I know you guys want to know where we're at, what we're doing, where we're going, where we're going to be, and why we're going to be there. So, quick tidbits, quick little filaments on where we're going to be, what we're going to be doing. We are figuring out where that's going to be, whether that's going to be Miami, New York, Austin, San Francisco, where we're going to be recording our next set of shows. We still got four or five more shows to put out, four or five more shows to go. Next week's a big, big, big show. We got Mayor Kay coming on the show. Mayor Kay is a good buddy, good friend. Really happy to start working with Mayor Kay. And I mean, there's no bigger bundle of positivity than that guy. And that's himself right there. He's a really powerful guy. Go check out a lot of his stuff, whether that's on YouTube or on Instagram. It's simple, and I mean, he's spreading a powerful positive messages. He's really inspiring. He's really great to hang around and be around. But that's coming up next week. And yeah, please, 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 guys, stay tuned with what we're doing. We got stuff coming out on YouTube. We got stuff coming out everywhere and anywhere we're sharing content. I mean, whether that's on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, etc. That's at On the Bus Podcast. You can go check it out. Go find it out. Go tune in, subscribe, and stay tuned to know where we're going to be, what we're going to be doing next. I mean, we got a big project in India coming up. Very excited about that. Any Indian people out there, any Indians in the continent of India that want to collaborate, that want to connect, or anybody that knows an incredible story and wants to collaborate on this next new project with us, hit us up. We'd love to have you on board. We'd love to have you on the bus. I mean, like I said before, you're either on it or off it. There is only two choices. Now, for our guest today, we have Tayo Roxon, host of As Told by Nomads, a podcast and a powerful storyteller, helping others tell their own stories. He's the CEO of UID Management, and this guy has incredible, not just a story himself, but he will captivate you with the way that he's able to portray and convey, and not even only tell his own story, but helping and pull out those incredible stories from every individual that we have. Because I know you guys know this about On the Bus. We love going after those people with incredible stories, and everybody's got a story to tell. And what Tayo does such an incredible job of is drawing that sensation out of each and every individual. So on this show, we get into how do businesses deal with Generation Zers and millennials in the workforce, the concept of identity, who you are and how we relate to your social identity, and the dangers of perpetuating news through false advertisers. We really enjoyed this conversation. So without further ado, Mr. Tayo Roxon.
Okay.
Tayo, welcome on the show, man.
Oh, wow. Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
We find you, we get you on the bus in crazy, crazy, crazy turbulent times.
I know. It was literally on a iron bus today that was taking me all over the city. And we started texting, what, like 2 o'clock? And I was like, oh, I'm going to make it. And then it's 3:30 now. So I'm excited to be here at least, finally. Yeah,
the MTA drags everybody down.
Well. Yeah. But no, it's a pleasure to be on here. I met your mutual friend, I guess, mm-hmm. when I was speaking at Fordham. And she had mentioned that, you know, I heard you do a podcast. You should meet my friend Brandon that does his podcast. You should have a lot of similar things. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, just in the terms of nomadicism, yeah. On the go, always on the move, never standing still. And it's kind of a really... Now we you want to say a trend, or you know, it's very popular. Not just with this millennial age, but you know, people not renting, the ability to move,
right.
the access to it. Not just with pricing and modes of transportation. Everybody can get everywhere now.
Yeah, and you know, for me, I you know, it was a part of my life before it became a trend. Right, I'm a Nigerian, and I grew up in 5 countries and 4 continents. So, my dad being a diplomat, we didn't quite have a choice, you know. Hey, you're posted here, go over here. So I was always in different schools, different environments, and I got used to that. But you know, the idea of being the only, this, the minority everywhere you went, and even when you come back to your country, being the hidden immigrant, because you might not quite sound like what you're expected to sound like, or you have a different perspective. That was pretty much the formative periods of my lives, and even with now my career, where I'm helping organizations deal with that transitionary period. You brought up the generational divide. A lot of millennials and Gen Z are now in the workforce, and you have a lot of Gen Xers and baby boomers who don't quite understand the transient nature of our generation, and they're like, why are you just not stable? so there's that divide, and how do you deal with that? And I think we're more lifestyle oriented, but it's not out of laziness like people like to say. It's more, there's a sense of purpose, and if you look at the culture behind what we have, we came up with the Facebooks, all the Airbnbs and Ubers and all that, and that's a sign of the times. And so, yeah, how do businesses deal with that? And how do we deal with that with our identities ourselves?
How are they dealing with that?
Some are good, some aren't. And the ones that aren't are having a tough time, because and the lifeline of any company is how you retain your employees, right? So if you're not able to meet at a middle ground, where I certainly hear the point of view where, hey, it takes time for you to get this promotion, so I want you to be able to stay here so you can understand that. But then I also understand the other part, where me not being physically in the office doesn't mean I'm not doing the work. And so the ones that are able to find that middle ground are doing well, and the ones that aren't are, you know, having a hard time. And that's usually with the institutional companies, maybe financial services and companies that have legacy type of old unwritten rules. It's usually tougher for them to retain younger staff or younger employees.
How do you help them craft a different mindset?
Well, I start off with, I go with every generation. So I start off with like, hey, let's go back to the baby boomers and your grandfathers and everyone, right?
Yeah.
What was the culture within? There was a Great Depression, it was a World War, and everything was reactionary towards that. And that's what happened. You know, after the Industrial Revolution, realized, hey, we don't need as much people in the factory. Now we have this. We have technology. And I always like to remind people that that's what is actually being what we're reacting to. It's not that because you're automatically born in 1980 or 1985 that means you're going to have a lazy mindset. It's more about, hey, the world is actually way more diverse than it's ever been. And we have the ability to text China, text India with WhatsApp or whatever. And how do you expect people that have grown up in that area to communicate? People are actually doing that. And then I also remind them that the people that they want to serve, their customers, the people that they want to be the thought leaders in front of, have similar mindsets to the people that you want to hire. So if you really want to grow in that market, you need to have someone that connects with them and understands them. And that transient nature is part of that culture. And some do get it and some don't. But yeah, it's really about just reminding them that it doesn't necessarily have – the resistance is going to be there, and I get it. But if you're not moving with the trends, you could be left behind. And that would ultimately hurt your profit. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I mean, all these companies, people forget they're in competition. I mean, the amount of recruiting – now that comes into pulling people in, and not just people, you know, in, you know, the greater tri-state area. Now it's, you know, with Canada is really interesting because they will recruit immigrants into their country based off of, you know, your math scores on testing or science exams.
Yeah.
And pulling in, you know, I want to say very, very highly qualified, you know, immigrants to fill in their workforce.
Yeah.
And highly technical tech skills, or what's the term with tech, math?
STEM.
STEM, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and even if we look at media, so like we're both in media, or three of us, right? We're all in media. I need to count. But if you look at YouTube and influencer generation, and you know, the fact that I was able to launch my career off a podcast, so all of you here are using a podcast to launch a career. But the podcast gave me visibility to be able to have a speaking career as well as a consulting career. I watch a lot of YouTube shows that are solely based on movies because I love I'm a cinephile. And I love movies and sports. There are people literally creating their own sports network and their own TV networks based on their location. It's like, hey, I'm here. I'm shooting this. And that's what is happening. You know, my brother is 19. I have a 19-year-old brother. He gets his news and information from YouTube. He's not watching CNN or Fox or any of this. He's looking at the influencers he's followed. So regardless of how a lot of CEOs think, if you're not understanding that, that's where your market is. And so if it appears that you're out of touch with that, it could actually hurt you because you're not recruiting the same way other companies are.
I mean, it's our tribal identity has sort of transitioned from our kinship group or the people that we grew up with who have the same skin color as us to now it's based on what we're interested in. Mm. Our interest identity becomes our social identity. It's super fascinating to think about.
No, it's true. I mean, look at the time we live in today with the elections, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The elections, Kavanaugh, Brexit, everywhere. There are people that are super reactionary and very polarized, but this is my side and this is what I want to do. And almost, it's like you said, it's tribalistic. If you don't identify with my tribe and whatever I believe, it's like you're against me. And and there's a good and bad to that, by the way. And my thing is, with my career, what I like to do is to help people connect effectively across cultures, because for much of my life, I had an identity crisis because I wasn't quite what anyone put me into. I was always operating in nuance, and I was trying to exist in the binary systems that the world has put up. But now I love the idea that we have platforms to tell our stories and for us to find our tribes. But what I don't love is the fact that we're using – sometimes some people do that at the expense of others.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you find that nuance and say, I accept your opinion, and I can communicate and exist around that? And it's a tricky place to be in, because obviously the identity need and the identity is something that's a big part of us, but a sense of belonging is something we all want to have. But how should we express that sense of belonging and make sure it's still inclusive?
Mm-hmm.
And that goes for companies, that goes for parents, that goes for, you know, people's gender orientations, governments, and policies that people make.
Yeah, I mean, Facebook fell into the biggest hole with that. I mean, that people were able to find like-minded people from all around the world and then close themselves off, because you can make a closed group. So the only thing you get, and I think you talk about this great, is the way the algorithms work on there is the funnels that Facebook will lock you in. So you only see a certain amount of things, or 10% of what people you like and who you talk to. So you literally just live in a separate world or own reality that you can generate and create when you go online.
Yeah, you only get exposed to things that confirm your beliefs, mm-hmm. right? And that's the danger. It's the bubble you can't escape. And that's what we have to be nuanced with. Mm-hmm. And I do a talk where I say, in order to communicate effectively across cultures, you have to educate, don't perpetuate, instead communicate. And on the education piece, it's about education of yourself as well as education of your environment. So we have to recognize what our own biases are at first. Like, what are our triggers? What are the things that we normally react positively and negatively towards? And then come to terms with that and see where areas for improvement are. And then the environment, I think a lot of times we live in this fast-paced world. We don't even know who our neighbors are or what they do and what their interests are. So understanding how the same set of laws could affect different sets of people. But the don't perpetuate piece has to do with, one, fact-checking, but also making sure you're not telling false stories. I when I first came to the United States, I was a 17-year-old with a mostly American accent, but no one believed that I was Nigerian. And I used to have arguments with my teachers and my roommates because they would tell me that you should be blacker, your English is too good. And I had a kid come sing The Lion King in front of me. And these were all these simple jokes that they thought, mm-hmm. I'm trying to bond with you. But that kind of stuff, if you're not firm your identity, can make people want to hide themselves. And then that is very internalized. So how you that perpetuates systems, because you think it's okay to do that. And you go into a workplace and you're like, you're too soft. But then with the elections is, if you're not verifying your truths and you stay in that thought bubble, that bubble you don't escape, you have situations where people can say, oh, Obama is really related to a monkey. And yeah, I saw it. This is my thing. And you have people sharing articles based on the headlines. There are stats that show that people shared articles based on headlines and not – they didn't even read it. It's like, oh, I love sports. Like LeBron, for example. I'm a huge LeBron guy. But like, oh, LeBron sucks, whatever. Share it. And that gets perpetuated. And that's such a dangerous behavior.
Dangerous. So dangerous.
Oh, my God.
But that's the thing that sells, too. I mean, people are like, oh, let's make a clickbaity ad.
Yeah.
Because people aren't even going to read it.
They're not.
We're all marketers. We understand it.
We're
taking care of something. You understand the cycle. Like, it works. It works for a reason.
Yeah.
It works. And it's, okay, as marketers, do we want to take advantage of that? you know, so people can see our products, so we can get a hold of them, so we can help share our information that we want to help. And then also, how do we not facilitate a mindset where people are going to critically think? How are we going to facilitate a mind where they, where we're giving a good product, but also they're getting a good product?
Yeah, the critical thought is what we, that's the thing. We have great systems to facilitate communication, but we can't lose sight of critical thinking, because I'm seeing institutions, the tradition, the CNN, the Fox, all of them, they're trying to do the same thing. The BuzzFeedify their news, and it's like, stay tuned for the news of all news in like 2 minutes, and then it's not the news. Even we saw it with the Trump tax return. It was promoted like, I have Trump's tax return.
Rachel Maddow. Yeah.
And I love Rachel. But, and then she goes, oh, it's 2015. And yeah, we're like, this isn't, it was like, I don't remember what year it was. It was a previous year that wasn't the recent year.
But there wasn't enough information on there that could dispose or predispose any kind of information, or negative or positive.
Exactly. Oh, with Omarosa for the tapes. Oh, she has the recording of the tape. And it wasn't even the right recording that was recorded, but you got the eyeballs. And I'm like, this has nothing to do with what we said. And that type of behavior is very dangerous, because you know that controversy sells. Reality TV is the same thing. And there's good and bad. I watch reality TV, but on The Bachelor, I'm not ashamed. I'm part of Bachelor Nation. but the host is always saying, the most dramatic episode ever. Every season is the most dramatic episode ever. And I'm like, I stopped believing him after the third season, but
it was good voiceover though.
Yeah,
but the most dramatic ever.
I'm like, but I always wonder, how do you get to that point where you feel like you're comfortable saying that? I've heard you say that for 17 years, and you can't believe that every season is the most dramatic season ever, because it's not. But that's how we're trained these days. So yeah.
The great point you made was like behavior, because there's, back to politics, there's just no side behaving well. It's okay. It's whether you're left or right. The amount of bullying and just negative attention everybody wants to draw from one side on the other is just, it just closes and walls people off even more.
Yeah.
Because there's no discussion anybody will have. There's one decision's made, and people don't realize with the amount of movement and flow, whether it's through the internet or just signing a petition. You can go online and get hundreds and thousands, millions of people to sign a petition and donate money to something. Why are we reliant on a bunch of old white dudes in one place in Washington, D.C. to make the rules and rights about what's going to happen to these people and that people? But then people in, New York City or in Montana who think that, no, these people make my decisions, it's going to stop and dictate me how I'm going to live.
Yeah.
It doesn't even work that way. They're having such a hard time doing that with states' rights and enforcing laws federally. It doesn't work that way. They're 19th century institutions, 18th century institutions that just can't keep up with the times.
Yeah. And, the other thing, that's such a great point. The thing that we need to all come to terms with is that we have way more power now than we've had in the 50s or 60s to influence more policies. But a lot of us are not willing to be accountable. I'll give you an example. I do a lot of diversity inclusion. Right? I run a diversity inclusion firm. One of my friends, he's at the gym and he's in recruiting, and he comes to me and says, "Hey, I got a great business idea for you. So you go into the companies to help make sure that they expose themselves to different parts of the world, right? Multicultural. I run a recruiting firm, and my job is to place salesmen. And he runs me through his process. He says, "All right, I look through the school, Ivy League, check. Work experience, 2 years, 2 years, 3 years. Seems like he's consistent. Look at his face, white, good looking, place." And I'm like, first of all, I know this stuff happens. But and then he says, one of his friend told him, his black friend told him, "Hey, what's the percentage of people you place? How many of them were people of color?" He says, less than 10. And then he asked him, "How do you feel about it?" He said, "Well, I feel bad, but it's not quick to make money." And then I asked him, because he pointed at me and he said, "That's why I need you, because you look like the people I want to place." And I said, "What you're saying to me is you don't want the responsibility of doing this, because you know what you should do and you're part of the system, but it's better for you to make money because it's quicker, and you don't feel like you should have the responsibility." And he was like, "Yeah, but I've got comfortable with this lifestyle and all that." And I was like, "Yeah, I get that, but you can't tell me that you want to make the change if you're not willing to do that hard work. You have to be accountable. There are things you have to call out." And I also said, ironically, what you're asking me to do, if I do my job the best way I can and you do your job the best way you can, I'm actually a direct competitor to you, because I'm I'm supposed to put you out of business because you are playing into a system mm-hmm. and you're not doing the work to find the people. But there are many pockets of that where we see things, we don't want to say things because we're afraid in social media we'll be panned in the court of public opinion, it's going to cut our money. And so we have to ask ourselves certain brutally honest questions.
I mean, it's taking away from cooperation almost. Like what makes a government work is their ability to cooperate on an extremely grand scale. They're able to take money and people and make it all fit together. And what happens when, let's say, that a fascist government comes in somewhere? It's usually because people stopped believing in that cooperation
yeah.
and some small group is now able to cooperate a little bit better and they can cooperate to overthrowing the power. We might over here say we want this and say we want that, but the reason that we're not doing anything is because we're not able to cooperate together. And one of the issues in my eyes, I'm curious what you think, is because we have these subgroups, we all have our interests displaced from each other. Even though we're interested, we can't cooperate together because we still disagree.
Yeah. No, and I agree with you, by the way. There's a confusion in the world where if you have different values and I disagree, we can't exist as friends. I grew up in two dictatorships. So the first 9 years of my life, I was in two dictatorships. A lot of what I saw was like, you know, ruthless suppression of rights, violation of you know, suppression of the press, and people that had opinions had to be in exile. And Nigeria is a country of 250-plus ethnic groups. A lot of those divisions were based on ethnic divides and religious divides, right? Most of us are all black. Most of us are black, so it wasn't racial. It was more around your ethnic and all that. And it goes to your earlier point with the tribalistic things where if you were part of this tribe, all of a sudden it was assumed you had no interest in my interest. And we have to go towards nuance because we are nuanced people, period. But I don't know why we got into this binary system where it's Republican, Democrat, it's this, it's that, it's black, white, because those binary systems actually take away a lot of people. If we're looking at Kavanaugh, for example, the Kavanaugh case, for example, no matter where you stand, I don't believe that every Republican and every Democrat believes what they voted. It's not – there's no way that it's such a Republicans no. are all this and Democrats are all that. But people have chosen party lines ahead of their
us, them.
Yeah.
They go us, them, and that's it.
They've admitted
yeah.
it, too.
Yeah, so they've admitted it.
No matter what, I'm going to vote for this guy.
Which
I'm
is
not
ridiculous.
Vote for that guy.
But the crazy thing is science. I mean, some of the recent science that I looked at on this said that people, when they are shown an us winning,
yeah.
they get a positive reaction to it, right? But when they get a them losing, the physical reaction in their body is much, much greater. Like, we are happier seeing the other group lose, even if it's at a cost of our own belief.
That's so ridiculous. And I believe that says, but that's the dangerous thing, and that's why I love what you three are doing. Yes, I love what you three are doing because that's the platform. And I'm not one that says I feel like everyone has a role because sometimes people always say, "Oh, you're white, so you're part of the problem, so you can't do anything." I think if anyone's part of the problem, you can be part of the solution. And then anyone that's part of a marginalized group, you can tell your story more, you can educate people more. But anyone that knows what to do, like my friend, he is actively part of the system, knows what to do. There's a role, right? It's not about shirking responsibility. Whether it's with Trump or any of these elections, the reason why those populist movements rise is because you have someone to blame. Immigrants, something happened. Oh, that's the reason for all my problems. That means you have no responsibility anymore, and someone's going to come fix that. But if we keep having the attitude that someone's going to fix it, we're not going to have the responsibility of our own sphere of influence and saying, hey, by the way, my son and my daughter, they think this about someone that looks like me, and this is a problematic thing because they could be a CEO and they could go to school and make fun of another person, and that person could get angry and react this way, and they will not process their thoughts. Everybody just goes from one end to the other without understanding the path that we take to get there, and mm-hmm. it's all everyday thoughts, things we do in our private homes as well as public spaces, and everything matters. We have to be more responsible, and we have to hold ourselves accountable for actions. It doesn't make us bad people or good people. It just means there's room for growth, which is human. And that's what I always try to remind people of. We're all infallible. I'm not trying to blame anyone. I just want people to be better and acknowledge that they can be better. Mm-hmm. So
I think we can all group each other in here and say we're optimizers. We want to get the most out of everything we do, every second of the day. Got to get the most done. And, you know, I think we all realize too, just from this discussion, that people don't understand the responsibility or the action that's needed for change to take place on a consistent level. in order for things to happen. I mean, my greatest analogy I put out there is in 1968, there were millions of people every single day in Washington, D.C., standing outside, bombings, shootings all around the country, people, fires, people burning things down, cities to the ground, and still nothing really was able to be implemented in action. Now we have the ability to connect, and it's that cooperation that's such a hindrance from that to happen. Because, yeah. I mean, throughout history, I mean, it's, yeah, people divided. I mean, you even look at the Pike-Seagull Agreement of how we established the Middle East. Hey, let's put the minority rule in power. Let's put the two groups, the Sunnis and Shias. The Sunnis are the majority. Let's put the Shias in power here in Syria, the Assad family, which is still in power today.
Oh, man.
Same way with Iraq. Let's divide these three people up. So let's put the Kurds. They're not going to give their own country. And then the Sunnis are in the middle and the Shias are down south. And the people still live between those lines.
Yeah, yeah. But you're looking at Syria now, it's gotten so complex because it's not just two sides anymore. It's three, four, five. And you can't – it almost – like if you please one side's going to be angry. But that was a problem that was created by someone because we didn't address those issues at the earliest stages.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's – you know, to your point where it's tribalistic, our side has to win. That downfall, that side is more important to me than that. And – I see people that are doing things beyond their values. I'm like, there's no way you really believe this. Because if I personalized that story to you and said, what if your daughter or your son was there? You will be the quick one to tell me that's a, oh, yeah, no, my son can't do it, but I would do it to another person's son. And that's such a – how do we get there, right?
Mm.
But I'm very optimistic because I feel like as storytellers and as people who are just telling our stories, we're just reminding people that we have – look, we're all infallible, but we have power to do this. And we're educating people on that. And it's a long journey. But we can't give up because, you know, if we give up, who doesn't give up? The bad guys.
Yeah.
This is what they want. They operate in chaos. Hitler, anyone, when they know there's division. I grew up in Nigeria and Africa was colonized by a lot of Europeans. They were the minority. But how they caused us to separate among each other was they carved us up in different countries. And the people that didn't necessarily live together were just placed together. All of a sudden, they said, hey, don't trust that person. Don't trust that person. Fight against each other. But they didn't have to do anything because we were already fighting amongst ourselves. That's exactly what happens now if we end up choosing tribalism over just like figuring out how to cooperate. Because other people would just be, oh, this works for us.
I still think it's really early in social media and our integration together. Like, we're all still navigating the waters of what these technologies can do for us, for what it means to sort of be extremely diverse on that type of technology. And I'm still very hopeful that we can come together. I think, obviously, I don't know if you all agree, I'm sure you all do, but I think what's the word I'm looking for? Diversity. I think diversity is one of the most important things that we can have because it helps us learn from each other. It helps us grow from each other. So yeah, we are seeing this sort of us versus them, but I truly think that that's sort of this middle ground into finding the, okay, we're all unified. We all can be unified even though we're different.
No, I agree. I 100% agree. I mean, the way I operate, I have to believe that today is better than yesterday and tomorrow will be better than today because – whether it's Muhammad Ali or anything, or any whether you have sports or anything, there's an element of trying before you get to where you get to. Even when you're working out, it's controlled failure. Like you can't get to the fifth rep, and then the next day you get to the sixth and the seventh. It applies to every one of our everyday life, and we have to get used to being patient, but also thinking big picture. I think the problem is many of us don't think big picture, and we just think, oh, you hurt my feelings, you said that. And we don't try to say, hey, why does what I say make you react that way? And why did that person do that? Because if we don't get to that level of understanding, we're just going to be like, I don't like your tone. I don't like what you said. It doesn't matter. I'm just going to shut down. And yeah, there's some level of humility that needs to be there, and we need to let go of our ego. But how do you let go of your ego when you've been socialized to think like if you're humble, you're weak? So there's hope, though. I'm not saying this for people to think that. I'm saying I say all these things so that anyone listening here
can think.
Yeah, critically think. They can think about what they're doing and how they're contributing to that. So that's what I'm trying to do.
Now, you have your own podcast, and you do speaking engagements all around the world, or you have most of them in New York? Or
No, mostly in national, but yes, I've done all around. Just by virtue of being Nigerian, it's, yeah, different parts of the world. But yeah, my podcast, As Told by Nomads, was launched on the same premise, which is, why do we live in a globalized and digitalized world and still have problems connecting? And initially, when I started it, I'm a third culture kid, and for those listening, a third culture kid is anyone that spent the formative periods of their lives outside of the parents' culture. So army brats, diplomatic kids, and kids of that nature. And so I just reached out to fellow TCKs and said, hey, I want you to talk about how you embrace your global identity, because we always hear a lot of negative dialogue around that. And gradually people that weren't TCK said, hey, I didn't know the world is like that. Can I come on? And then it became just a podcast about people sharing business ideas, entrepreneurship ideas. And it's all based on my mission statement, which is use your difference to make a difference, because everyone's unique. And I believe that use your difference to make a difference is as much a personal call to action as it is a recognition, a celebration of differences around us.
What kind of trends are you seeing from the people you talk to from the start of your podcast to where you are today?
Well, going back to the podcast, I always cringe. I was very just nervous kid.
Of course, yeah.
23-year-old, like, I'm telling my story. But from the beginning, I think people are always they're always surprised by the vulnerability of stories I share, because I share failures as much about that. But the growing trend and increasing things I've seen is that people are realizing that their stories are more powerful than they thought they were. I get a lot of emails almost on a daily basis, and people always say, I'm not this, but I relate to that. Like, I didn't grow up here, but I relate to that. And it's a reminder for people that despite physical boundaries or geographical boundaries, their stories are these universal things that we've all grown up with, whether it's from the caveman days, and there are ways to connect people, and people are finding themselves in some of these stories. And I think that's the most important thing. And I think we have to get back to the place where people can, at our core, the most common thing that we have is that we're human. And many of us want to have security, want to have family, and we want to make sure our family are safe. That's something we can all agree on. Now, we have different ideas about how we get there, but people are reminded about that. And that's a cool thing to see.
Bravo. Got it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Teo, it's close. We got it. I think we got it in for a condensed conversation. Thumbs up. We're all good. Thank you so much for joining in. If you could, one more time, give yourself a plug. Let everybody in our audience know where they can find you. Listen to where you speak. If you have any upcoming engagements or events coming up, right. We have a worldwide audience, I'm sure, anywhere and everywhere.
Oh, thank you.
We can send some people your way.
Well, Teo Roxon is the place. I think I'm the only one, but at least I'm the only one in social media that has that handle. So Teo Roxon on Instagram, Twitter. And you can check me out on TeoRoxon.com or As Told by Nomads podcast.
Beautiful.
Yeah, we're going to have you back after. We're going to have you back. Yeah, that's
I'm sorry. This was actually my fault. Or me and MTN. Or MTA. we colluded. But no, this was fun. Thank you, too, for having me on.
No problem. And thank you to everybody for tuning into this show. Remember to hit that subscribe button. Hit the share button. Really appreciate you guys tuning in. And if you love this episode, make sure you give it a share. And make sure you check out Teo's stuff. And what else we got? We going to plug in anything else right now?
Plug away, plug a YouTube, plug it all.
Everything, guys. The Save the Dina Tour, the 16-episode series all around South America. It's on there. We traveled the continent. We drove on the most dangerous roads in the world. We almost lost some toes, parasites, and we met some incredible individuals and told some amazing stories from Venezuelan refugees trying to escape Venezuela to the Bolivian traffic zebras. You name them, we found them, and we told some amazing stories. Go check out their stories on our YouTube page at On the Bus Podcast, and get yourself some CBD oil from Green Roads World today. It saved our ass down there. We wouldn't have got through with all those parasites and lost toes. And use promo code On the Bus for a 15% discount and any and all sales. And I think that's it, guys. Teo, thank you again. On the bus.
Thank you for having me. You too.
We're out.
For those who...